one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, Phillies come out of this all-star break with a big homestand. They had the Mets, they had the Dodgers, they had the Yankees, a real litmus test, are the Phillies for real? And they lose all three series coming out of the all-star break and did not look very good doing it for most of these different games. A real Jekyll and Hyde performance. Winning one game in each of the three series, but looking pretty awful in each of the three series where they lost both those games. We're going to get into all of it here. We're going to talk about the offense. We're going to talk about the pitching. We're going to talk about the defense. And of course, the trade deadline is right around the corner. We're recording here on Monday morning, a little after 10 a.m. Eastern time, July 27th. The trade deadline about a week away. So it's going to really start to happen this week, folks. So we got a big roundtable edition of the podcast. Justin Clue, Liz Rocher, both here with me. Liz, of course, is the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. You can follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Liz, how are we feeling here after an interesting last nine games?
I'm feeling pretty putrid. I'd say the Phillies are playing pretty putrid. It's the only word I can think of right now. We watched most of the game on Sunday night, and at least that was good. Every other time I tuned in over the past week has been exceedingly unpleasant. Yeah.
I shudder to think where this podcast would be starting off here if they'd lost on Sunday night. At least they did give you some kind of springboard into your week, but overall a really depressing performance by the team here coming out of the All-Star break. We've got Justin Clue of Baseball Prospectus. Of course, he hosts a couple of podcasts over at our Hitting Season Patreon called The Dirty Inning and Absolutely Hammered. You can follow him on Blue Sky at Justin Clue. He's also author of Summer of the Cheap Wieners, the book you can see right over his right shoulder there. Follow him on Blue Sky at Justin Clue, as I just said. Justin, how's it going, buddy?
If these hitting trends continue, we'll be back to seeing 1941 Phillies statistics in the headlines in no time. Obviously, one baseball game is too much to have an emotional reaction over. A long-term emotional, to draw conclusions, let's say. Emotional reactions can happen whenever you want to have them. But to draw a conclusion after one game is dramatic, and I think we also know the short-sightedness of that. You start looking at groups of 9 or 10 games, and I think that's when perhaps the worm starts to turn a bit. And here we are, 9 games deep into the second half. And I gotta tell you, since our last conversation, I've become much more interested in trading every prospect to fix any problem this team has, because really how much time is left after this, and they kind of look like they're going to have problems they have until there's some kind of solution presented. There is no in-house fix. There's no the offense will just score more by doing more things than just the one and become consistent. That's just, it won't happen. It won't happen. I'm sure in some ways we've all come to terms with that, but these three straight series that people have been eyeing up since the beginning of the season, three big opponents right in a row, right at home, thinking this would be some sort of proving ground for the Phillies. Well, you know, here we are. They went 3-6
3-6 on the homestand.
It was
a
bunch of ugly losses, and heads up, Liz, but Shea Langeliers tore his meniscus. So there's not a whole lot of great news for the Phillies on this Monday morning.
God, that. Oh, no.
Yeah. So Shea Langeliers is off the trade market for anybody who's wondering, because he's out for the year.
Find a new slant. Damn it.
Yeah. You got to rewrite some articles here. The Phillies enter Monday. Like Justin said, they lost 2 of 3 against the Mets, the Dodgers, and the Yankees, each 3-6 on the homestand. They've lost three straight series coming out of the All-Star break, all at home. They are now, all of a sudden, 5.5 games behind the Braves in the National League East. Still doing fine in terms of the wild card. They have a 2-game lead on the second wild card spot over the Diamondbacks and a 3-game lead overall. I mean, I look at this team now. I know they're going to make the playoffs. I know there's a lot of people really worried they're not going to make the playoffs. The National League teams behind the Phillies in the standings, it's a lot of yuck. I mean, as many holes as the Phillies have, they have enough stars on this team that they're going to outlast the Diamondbacks and the Pirates and the Reds and all those kinds of teams. You know, I mean, they're going to do that. But we're all looking to October right now. And there's a reason why after this last 10 days, this 9-game homestand against the Mets are not a good team, but specifically against the Dodgers and the Yankees. I'm as down on this team as I think I've been really since the end of the 2022 season when I lit into them right before they got hot and went on that run in October. They are now 13-27, 13 wins, 27 losses versus teams currently in a playoff position. 13-27 against teams this year, nice. Currently in a playoff position. Only the Royals, who are in last place in the American League Central, have a worse record against current playoff teams. They have the worst defense in baseball. Trey Turner made his league-leading 18th error. He's on pace for 28 errors at shortstop, but it's not just him. They struggle on defense pretty much around the horn at this point, in the outfield. Everywhere, they're kind of leaking oil defensively. Offensively, an inconsistent Phillies offense. We're going to dive into that more specifically here in just a minute. They still can't hit left-handed pitching, even mediocre left-handed pitching. They lost again with the number 5 spot in the rotation. They have not won a game since the number 5 spot in the rotation going back to May 18th. And there's nothing on the horizon here in-house to help. We're all looking at the trade deadline to try and solve a lot of these problems, to get a lot of answers. And I just don't know that there's a whole lot of answers out there for a deeply flawed Phillies team that has enough topside talent to help them keep winning games. They're going to avoid long losing streaks because they have all of this top-tier talent. But you see the way they play, poor fundamentals on the bases, bad defense, an inconsistent offense. And Justin, they're going to make trades, but they can't fix all the problems in trades either. And so, you know, I think the fan base is, and you can see this in the attendance, the Phillies are not selling out Citizens Bank Park right now. I think the fan base has little confidence in this team, despite where they are in the standings, despite the fact they're probably going to make the playoffs again. The fan base is not coming out to these games in the way that they have in previous years. And there may be other reasons for that as well. I know it's super expensive and everything else, but I don't know. I think the fan base is down on the Phillies too at the moment, and for good reason. I don't think anybody believes in this team right now.
Yeah. I think we knew coming in the past couple years that everybody's trying to speed run to the postseason. But then if you're kind of putting out there in the regular season, even if it does feel like you're still going to make the playoffs, that you're the same kind of team with the same kind of problems that has lost in the postseason, then you kind of take that carrot away from people to an extent. And you're right. You know, it's been ungodly miserable to be outside during the day, especially sitting out in the sun at a ball game, wildfire smoke. And like you said, the complete unaffordability of going to a Major League Baseball game for a lot of people is going to factor against that. But the thing is, in Philadelphia, all that stuff becomes worth it when you're a team people want to come see. And when you're a team that drops 3 straight series at home like this, just looking kind of like lumpy and lousy, yeah, that's not going to be a huge draw for people. Now, as for the actual baseball playing itself, the Phillies have won 3 games since the All-Star break. They have hit 12 home runs since the All-Star break. 8 of those 12 home runs were in the 3 wins that they won.
Wow.
They have scored 27 runs combined in those 3 wins. They have scored 9 runs combined in their 6 losses. It's kind of easy to kind of track what the problem is here. They are tied for 5th in baseball and homers since the All-Star break. They are tied for 16th in total runs scored since the All-Star break. And that's with a lot of ties ahead of them. So a more accurate way to describe it is that there are only 2 National League teams who have scored fewer total runs than the Phillies since the All-Star break. One of them is the Mets, who are in last place and just beat them in a 3-game series. And the other one is the Marlins, who they get to go play in Miami after this and have been, you know, kind of a pebble in the shoe of a lot of teams so far this year. So what's the conclusion? The offense works when they hit home runs, and they aren't hitting enough home runs. This is a very familiar story for anybody who's been watching these Phillies the past few years. If they're not hitting home runs, often that means they're not scoring. And if they're not scoring, often that means they're not winning. So that factors into the general crowd you're going to see at Citizens Bank Park too. Even if they do start hitting home runs, there's no guarantee that they will keep hitting home runs. With their depth issues, one chunk of missed time could sink a whole dimension of this team, and the bullpen's enough of a disaster to require them to hit more home runs than perhaps they had planned to, and perhaps it's a pretty solid bet then that any relievers from that pen are going to be given some runs back as well, if not like a whole lead after you have already hit your home runs for the day. So That in general will leave you pretty infuriated if you're on the couch. If you've spent hundreds of dollars and roasted alive on a stadium seat, it's going to put you in an even worse mood. It's nice to come out on a Sunday night and win a game in primetime against the Yankees, and they looked good doing it. Well, their offense looked good
doing
it.
Their offense looked good, yeah.
There's still like a general haze, like a layer of sloppiness over this team that makes them look different from a team that is playing efficiently and well. And consistently, that looks like, yeah, they could go to the postseason and keep winning because it'll just be the postseason and there'll be more games to win. Whereas with the Phillies, it's like, I don't know, it might be wonky enough that they look like they shouldn't even be there. They might look aces enough that they can run through a team in a round or two, but like there's just too much variation and too much reliant on things they can't control and too much stuff they can control that they do wrong. So yeah,
that's great.
The end result is simply that you get a team that's just messy and sloppy and gives you the same thing every time. Yeah, that was a mistake. It can't happen again. Well, guess what? It's going to. That's part of the problem, too, that some of these flaws aren't just flaws. They're automatic. It's automatic. Trey Turner's going to create some kind of fielding misplay of some kind, whether it gets called an error or not, every night. It's automatic that that fifth spot is going to lose you a baseball game because there's nobody in it who can pitch the way, you know, this team will occasionally need to get the offense going or hold back a putrid, like lame little offense that that they should be able to beat. And when stuff just turns into automatic, then you got a serious problem. It's not just like a flaw. It's something that other teams can and will exploit. So, yeah, it's easy to look at this team right now after these three straight series losses and see a team that, people aren't getting excited about.
Part of the issue is the fandom. I'd say this all feels so familiar. It feels the same as it did 3 years ago, as it did 2 years ago, as it did last year, really. And so when you see and feel it going the same way as it did the last few years, why do you want to participate in that? Late season Phillies baseball is torturous. We all know this because we do it all the time.
Yeah, it is. And we haven't even gotten to late season yet. Right now, it's mid-season Phillies baseball is torturous. And I think so much of torturous baseball is offense. And I want to start kind of with the offense. And I know I've seen many wizened people, and I think the Phillies front office is leaning in this direction too, who are talking about at the trade deadline the need for pitching. Pitching trumps everything else. You need, they need another starting pitcher. They need help in the bullpen. There's no doubt about the fact that those two things are true. But what has fouled up in October, I know that they have blown some late leads over the last couple of years. That's absolutely been the case as well. But in the playoffs, you need three great starters, which is what the Phillies have. The Phillies got great starting pitching performances against the Dodgers last year in the playoffs. It didn't matter. We saw it a couple of times during this homestand. They got great performances from Zach Wheeler and Jesus Luzardo and lost both of those games because they can't score consistently. After Saturday's 3-1 loss to the Yankees, it was the 25th time the Phillies had scored one run or fewer in a game. That's the most in Major League Baseball, and that's about a quarter of their games. In about a quarter of their games, they are scoring one or zero runs. In the homestand, Justin alluded to this just a second ago. Here are the runs the Phillies scored by game. 1, 6, 1, 10, 1, 5, 0, 1, 11. Okay, this is you can't lay out inconsistency any more obviously than that. And this is all having to do with their biggest problem. It's not the home runs. It's not the batting average with runners in scoring position even right now. The Phillies have a .257 batting average with runners in scoring position this season. That's 11th best in baseball. Their slugging percentage with runners in scoring position is the best in baseball. Their .446 slugging percentage with the runners in scoring position is the best in baseball. That's their only saving grace right now, is occasional homer hot streaks from Schwarber and Harper, and the fact that when they do get runners on this year, they're actually doing some damage in those situations. Now, I hope that continues. But the fact that they so rarely are getting guys on base, they're not working pitchers, they're not working counts. In the game against Cam Schlittler on Friday night, they struck out 13 times with zero walks. I know Schlittler's great. He's either going to win the American League Cy Young or finish runner-up. But they've done this against every decent to good starting pitcher in the league this year not named Paul Skeens. Skeens is the one guy they've gotten to this year. Everybody else, if you've got a fastball, they are shutting you down. And I don't
it's
know
like
why Paul
give
Skeens
up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, and so you have an offense here that also struggles against left-handed pitching. Ryan Weathers on Saturday night is a great example, maybe the best example of their struggles against lefties. This is a middling left-handed starter. He came into the game with an ERA in the low fours, 4.25 ERA following the game, where he went 5 2/3 innings, gave up one run, struck out 7 and walked only 1 against the Phillies. I mean, this is just, it's on base percentage. They're not getting on base. Their 3.03 on base percentage is the worst in baseball, tied with the Blue Jays for the worst in baseball. The only way they can score, as Justin gave you the numbers with the home runs, the only way they can score is if they get homer happy. And you can make that work for a couple of weeks. It worked in June, for a lot of June. We saw it work in the 2022 playoffs for up until game 3 of the World Series. It worked for, up until game 4 of the World Series. It worked for them. But if you can't generate walks, if you can't generate good at-bats, if you can't constantly have guys getting on base like the good offenses do, you're going to go out and you're going to go 0, 1, 10, 1, 5, 0, 1, 10. That's how you can't play consistent baseball that way. And that's why I think no matter who, what anybody tells you about what their most important needs are at the trade deadline, it's a bat, at least one. Like they have, if there is a possibility, if there is a chance that someone out there can be brought in to help this offense be more consistent, a high on base guy, a table setter or two to put at the top of the lineup, that's what they have to prioritize more than the pitching, because I think they can figure the pitching out. They can't figure out this offense with it currently constructed this way.
Do you think one guy, I know you just said one or two, but do you think one guy can make that difference?
I mean, probably not on his own, but we've seen how one guy can kind of transform things. I mean, Harrison Bader really helped transform things last year, and he was just kind of one guy. I think if you get a really good on-base guy at the top of that lineup, it does change some things. That's why I do think maybe they do need to focus on, because I don't think they're going to get a star. So I think maybe they do need to get a couple of guys who really specialize in getting on base. And just so you can have some guys in the lineup who just will make a pitcher work a little bit even. You know, I mean, it doesn't even, you don't even always have to get on base. If you're just making a pitcher work, we've seen the Phillies, we've seen Turner and Bohm have some really good at-bats over the course of the last couple of days. Some long at-bats, 13 pitch at-bats, 12 pitch. Those are great. And usually if you make a pitcher pitch that much, he's going to throw you a mistake. But the Phillies just don't do that. So many easy at-bats. But I agree with you, Justin. I don't know, like, can Mike Trout, to throw out a name, would he magically fix the Phillies lineup? I don't know that he does. But I know that he would be more impactful than going out and getting Griffin. What was the Nationals pitcher?
Foster
Griffin.
Yeah, I mean, Trout solves your attendance problem for about a week as well.
He does. So,
please, I mean,
but I
imagine that with the LeBron news.
Yeah,
the city would explode.
They would.
I'm generally with you, John. That it's not even a question I'm asking, like, facetiously. Like, is there a one man who changes the line? I know that we've seen that happen before, but if there is a guy, we need that guy for sure. We need the biggest impact from the lowest profile person you can acquire, because that's what the Phillies are equipped to do, and that's who's going to be available to them. And don't forget, there are other teams lining up for those same guys who can pay more for them, or perhaps put together a more enticing offer. So that's quite the challenge they've got ahead of them. I think you're going to wind up with like a three-man cocktail that not everyone is thrilled about as far as being like their move at the deadline. But then again, I don't think people are going to have the right to be disappointed in what the Phillies do, because at no point has anybody have the Phillies made it clear that like this is going to be some sort of big blockbuster thing. Like everyone knows where we're shopping. You can't be disappointed when they don't get Trout or something.
Yeah, I mean, Liz, I think what a great deal. I mean, I look at the deal that the Nationals made with the Red Sox, the Red Sox picking up Curtis Mead, who obviously was a former Phillies farmhand. It was the one-on-one trade for Christopher Sanchez. The Nationals traded Curtis Mead, who's having a terrific season at the plate, for a left-handed starter named Connelly Early, who's in his second season. He pitched phenomenally for the Red Sox down the stretch a season ago and was having a very good season. He's on the injured list, but we'll be getting off the injured list in a few days. That's the kind of player the Phillies really kind of needed to go after. But the Phillies don't have a young starting pitcher that they can give up, or even a prospect. Andrew Painter, maybe, but Connelly Early right now has more trade value than somebody like Andrew Painter, because Early's done it. We've seen him be effective at the major league level. Like this, that's the kind of move I'd love to see the Phillies make. But to the point we've been making the last few weeks, I don't think they have somebody like that that would help them get a player like Curtis Mead. I hope I'm wrong. Maybe I'm misjudging and undervaluing the Phillies farm system and their prospects. I don't know.
It would be great if one guy, but like the Phillies don't, as you said, they don't have enough guys, any good guys to trade for one-on-one or maybe even two. Like, speaking of a cocktail, they're going to have to throw together something pretty complicated if they want to get something valuable back in return, because they don't even have any near major league ready guys. Like, Andrew Painter might be worth he'd be worth a team taking a flyer since he just made the majors. I think he still has a lot of potential, a lot of changes he can go through. But even that feels a little bit like a stretch. And as Justin said, there's no one guy out there. This is all just, it's like one of those stupidly hard puzzles that are all one color. And you're just like trying to fit the pieces in and none of them are going to work right. And so you got a puzzle, but it's like there's pieces like upwards and shifting and it's terrible. That's what this team feels like to me. It's what this trade deadline feels like it's going to be. It's just going to be a mess of pieces that they have to pound with a hammer to get into place. And nothing ever works well like that.
Do you, John, take, we talked about this on Friday, but do you, John, take Dave Dombrowski at his word when him and Preston Mattingly and other people in the development are like, no, there's interest in our players. There's like more interest in our farm system than people would probably think. Or, you know, there's guys lower down that have somebody's eye. Like, don't worry about our players being valued, because they are being valued, was the general idea coming from the Phillies.
I think it's a load of nonsense, to be honest with you. I don't believe it. But here's the problem. You say that, well, then the fan base is going to expect you to then use these prospects that a lot of teams have interest in to go get real help.
Hey, don't forget about all that money we're getting from the Ghost Energy deck. Remember, John Middleton literally said there's a big free agent we can get with that money now. So, you know, remember that, John Middleton. People don't forget. Sorry, go ahead.
Let's make sure people don't forget.
Yeah. Well, I think if Dombrowski and Preston Mattingly are saying that merely to rebuff the criticism that I have had and others have had vocally about the farm system, which was ranked 29th by Baseball America just a few weeks ago, then they can do that if it's a face-saving thing. But now you're telling the fan base, okay, we actually do have real prospects that people want. So the expectation is going to then be, great, bring in real help. And if they don't bring in real help and they say, well, you know, other teams had better packages or whatever the excuse they're going to use is, you can fire back and say, but you said we have all this talent in the minor league system. When I know I can see with my own eyes what's going on in the minor league system. I can see what's going on with Aiden Miller. Who's trading for Aiden Miller right now with a bad back? I am sure that teams would love to trade for Andrew Painter. I think he still has probably more value than maybe we think he does around the league. I don't know that he would not be a throw-in in any deal. He would likely headline any deal the Phillies make here at the trade deadline, but his trade value is undoubtedly taking a hit. I think there's a lot of question. He's had a really good week in Lehigh Valley this last week. He pitched great on Sunday and looked much better. There's reason for a little bit of optimism there because he is so young, and you feel like, okay, the more he pitches after the surgery, maybe the fastball will come back and all that stuff. But man, Dave Dombrowski, if he's going to try to sell me that there's a lot of interest in the guys the Phillies have, great. Then bring in the help, because the Phillies need it. They need bats, they need relievers, and they need a starting pitcher. And if they're going to use their big, if like Foster Griffin is going to be their big acquisition this trade deadline, let me throw this out to you guys. Like, if it's Foster Griffin, and then they get like like a Spencer Steer for a bat and like a couple of non-closer, non-elite type relievers, but guys who are interesting, you know? How do you feel about that trade deadline, Liz? Let me start with you. How do you feel about that trade deadline? If it's Foster Griffin, who's like a number three starter on a good rotation, he'd probably slot in as a number four on the Phillies. You get a number four starter, a good one, you know, and you slide Aaron Nola to number five and you do all that. And then you kind of get like a right-handed bench bat and you get a reliever or two that you like their peripherals. Does that do it for you?
I mean, that's a lot of moves. And I mean, that I don't know if it would do it for me, but I wouldn't be upset. I wouldn't be angry about it. I don't know. Like, it's a lot of moves, and it would be Dombrowski attempting to actually fill some holes that we see. Not holes that he sees that he's filling, you know, somewhere else. It's holes that we see that are being filled. So I'd be fine. I'd be fine with that. I don't think I'd thrilled is the right word, but I'd be totally fine with that.
Justin, same to you. Yeah.
This would be right at the level I would expect them to be fighting for. I'm kind of expecting to, like, I don't know, just get a player that, like, I feel like they're wading into these waters with players that I just generally don't like, and like they're willing to just compromise on stuff like that. But if they went like Foster Griffin, I would feel like there was stability in an area where there had been literally none for a long time. Where, like, I'm talking about automatic losses. Yeah. Like that solves that problem, because Foster Griffin's not an automatic loss. He is a big get for the Nationals in that acquiring him age 31 season after he's been playing in Japan. And now he's somebody that people want to acquire at the trade deadline. That's a big win for the for
big
a team like
the
them. Nationals.
Yep.
Yeah. That just like the Curtis Meade trade was. So they've got somebody people want. And it's not like a total mirage either. He's kept that ERA under three, throwing a cutter and a four seamer. I mean, this is what the Phillies have been missing at the back of their rotation. A guy who can just go out there, even if he's just supposed to be an innings eater. I mean, he's served more than that purpose with Washington. So if he comes to Philadelphia in a trade and continues that work, that is more than you've gotten out of that spot all season long, with like three, four different guys getting that role. And you don't have to keep throwing bullpen games on a team with a crappy bullpen. So taking the automatic part of a loss away is, I think, of great value for this team that has really, you know, doing that thing again where they just win coolly one out of every three games, which is not a great pace to be winning at.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think so. Here's kind of what I would love. Well, let me throw another kind of scenario at you here, because like you said, the number five starter issue is an automatic loss at this point. They've gotten no wins from their number five starter since May 18th. You know, the Brian Keller story is a great story. He pitched on Saturday night, a 32-year-old rookie making his major league debut. He had all these surgeries when he went to Japan a couple of years ago, had to pay $12,000 out of his pocket for a second Tommy John surgery in order to try and get back to the big leagues. Former 39th round pick in 2016. You know, I think that's the same draft they got Aaron Nola. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I might be wrong about
2014
that.
2014 is Aaron Nola.
Okay, sorry. So yeah, so a couple seasons after Aaron Nola. That would make sense based on the age. But a great story. And I would love it if Brian Keller was the answer, was the fix. You know, he's been great in AAA. He's not. He's not. And, you know, the bloom will come off that, will come off the, like it came off the Alan Ronhell Rose, right? I mean, he had a couple of starts in the majors that were okay, pitched great in AAA. They do need somebody here to stabilize that rotation. And so I like as a pitcher, I like Foster Griffin. I think he's one less left-handed starter the Phillies would need to face this year too. So you're kind of helping both sides of the coin there, you know, with the offense. I think here's the type of trade deadline I can see the Phillies having. And let me know if you think I'm kind of going, if I'm shooting too high here. Foster Griffin, you bring in Foster Griffin as your number four starter. You get Heliot Ramos from the Giants. I think it's a guy they like a lot. I don't know how much I like him. He is a right-handed hitter. He has a couple of seasons with more than 20 home runs. He's like a 2-3 win player, like a 2.5 win player at his peak. But he's a decent right-handed hitting outfielder. And maybe you get him out of San Francisco, he hits better at Citizens Bank Park. Then the other guy that has been linked to the Phillies this week is our old friend Jeff Hoffman.
Okay, I'm just going to cut you off right there.
Great,
and
do
show
it.
You my notebook where I have those three names written down as the three names that I feel like, yeah, based on the rumors you've heard and what it feels like the Phillies are going to do, that's your cocktail.
Yeah. Okay, so
that's
incredible. That's amazing. Yeah, well, Justin and I did not talk about that beforehand. So yeah, and I'm not just going based off of like what the room, those feel like Dave Dombrowski mm-hmm. moves. That feels like a Dave Dombrowski trade deadline. And so I guess, I don't know what they'd have to give up, how much of their farm system they would have to give up to get all those guys. I mean, I think the fact that Jeff Hoffman is kind of expensive means you don't have to really give up a whole lot in terms of prospects for him. Foster Griffin's going to be your big ticket item there. He really is.
Roller coaster ride for Jeff Hoffman and his stops elsewhere too. So it's not even like that's like a, all right, we got Hoffman. Like we're talking about, what if they got Mason Miller to pair with Johan Duran a couple weeks ago, and now we're like, what if they got Jeff Hoffman? And you're like, yeah, what if they got Jeff Hoffman? And that's part of the reason why it feels like a move they could do this year, in that he has been pretty underwhelming, I think, for large chunks of his closing career in Toronto. So, yeah, I in a way, that's like both a turnoff, but also makes it seem like it's more possible that like that would be a solution they'd throw in with the rest of that group. I have kind of like come around on Helio Ramos. I'm not saying there's anybody that I would be excited, to be honest, to see this team get. I feel like maybe a Dave Dombrowski surprise of some kind. Not like a big name, but just like a different name that you hadn't considered is always on the table. But Ramos is cool because Ramos crushes lefties. The disparity in his lefty versus righty numbers is obviously huge. He'd be that right-handed hitter that you've been missing. He's 26. Doesn't hit arbitration until next year. So like there's a lot to like there. But the problem is then like the more things you list that you like, the more you wonder, is this a guy the Phillies can truly acquire in a market where other teams are looking for the same guy? But if he was the bat that they got, I would be on board with that. He is a player that statistically fits into the hole this offense has created for itself.
Liz, what would you think of that triumvirate?
I like it. I think it's good. I have always had an eye on Helio Ramos. I do not like good players or decent players being on the Giants, so it'd be great if we could save him. And I also approve of trading with the Giants because they're run by Buster Posey, who is not the brightest baseball light bulb in the box. And I always favor trading with teams who don't really know what they're doing. And I'm going to say Buster Posey, I don't think he totally knows what he's doing. So I'd like them to trade with him, to trade with them. I mean, I don't dislike Hoffman. His throwing partner is no longer with us, sadly, Matt Strom. But I hope he would find a better home here and find a little bit more consistency, you know, back with the team that allowed him to get that contract with the Blue Jays. You know, he came back in a big, bad way with the Phillies and, you know, it paid off for him. And unfortunately, he did not live up to it. But I sort of have some hope that maybe back here, he could find a little bit more consistency.
I agree that if you catch Buster Posey alone in his office, you could take the Giants for a ride. I don't think that's a joke.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
Yeah. Well, I think
I wouldn't say it if I didn't think it's true. He's just not a bright baseball mind.
So a couple of things with Jeff Hoffman. He's been really up and down with the Blue Jays. He's been really great at times, and he's been really terrible at times. I think we kind of saw that during his Phillies career as well. His ERA this year, 4.30, but in June it was 0.75. In July it was 2.84. This is what the Phillies relievers are. They'll have, like Kirkering, will have a month or two with an ERA under one, and then he'll have a couple of months where he can't stop walking two guys every time out. I mean, there's just a lack of confidence there. The difference between going out and getting somebody like Mason Miller versus Jeff Hoffman is worlds apart just in terms of confidence. But I understand Mason Miller, the Phillies aren't getting Mason Miller. That's just not happening. So Hoffman might be the best, might be the best guy you can get. They need a lefty. They need a lefty reliever too. And so they've got to figure that out as well, because Tanner Banks just went on the 60-day IL. He's pretty much done for the year now at this point, too. So you need to get a lefty reliever. Jeff Hoffman is fine, but that doesn't solve the lefty reliever problem. And my only issue with Ramos is I'm intrigued by him. He's a young player. You'd have him under team control through 2030, so you'd have him for a long, long time. he's not an on-base guy. His overall on-base percentage right now is under 300, which is right in line with the rest of the Phillies. Against left-handers, it's about 333. So if he's only hitting against lefties, it's a little bit better. But that's where a guy like Luis Arias would be a more preferable target. But then you worry about moving all the positions around. Somebody's got to move somewhere from the infield. And is it Bryce going back to right field? And, you know, if Bryce goes back to right field, is Arias a good enough first baseman that Harper would say, yeah, I'll go back to right field for Luis Arias? Probably not. You know, like, I don't know that he would be. So, I feel like the three names we laid out are an extremely likely three-headed trade deadline monster for Dave Dombrowski, and he would likely get lots of kudos for it. But how many problems it really solves is a great. It would solve the rotation problem, but I don't know how much it helps you in the bullpen or at the in the lineup. I think it's up in the air how much that would help.
In general, I'm really eager to see what he does, just because there are two big problems that need solving. And they're both sort of on the same level. So I'm eager to see what he does. If he puts all of his weight on one side or another, what does he consider to be the most important problem the Phillies have? And what he does with the rest of it, if he goes for one big guy or if he decides a whole bunch of guys are the right idea. There are a lot of ways to go, and I'm eager to see what Dombrowski does this time, because he's done something a little different almost every trade deadline.
I think the broadest question here is, you're talking about pitchers who like Hoffman. Okay, he has a great month and then a bad month, and you kind of just hoping, all right, when he's here, hopefully we just catch more of the good months than the bad ones. And to a certain extent, that's just baseball. You know, you're not getting perfect players who hit their ceilings 100% of the time in any trade. You know, that's why those guys who can do that are superstars, and they're super uncommon. So the Phillies, let's imagine, I mean, they need to go into the postseason regardless of what they do at the trade deadline, with all their plates spinning. And a lot of that is just kind of like luck that you're getting, like you're catching Kyle Schwarber while he's hot and Harper while he's hot and maybe Bohm while he's hitting a little bit better. And you're getting stuff from guys who maybe you weren't getting it from before. One of the issues for this team so far this year, we've pointed out specifically, is that you didn't really get your hot Edmundo Sosa streak that you've kind of come to rely on for a month out of the season. So I guess my question then is, that is kind of just baseball. So how different from other contending teams are the Phillies in their need for guys to be hitting their ceilings at the right time versus acquiring the right player? Like, all you're going to wind up for is a lot of guys who you're just hoping are playing well as they can at the time you need them to play. And obviously the Dodgers seem to be immune to like all of that because they have the depth and the talent. But how many other playoff teams are kind of facing that same issue? And do the Phillies just seem worse because that's the team we watch on a daily basis? Or are they truly in a more precarious place? And, you know, despite that self-awareness, I think I still feel like the Phillies are in a deeper hole in that regard than the other teams they might be playing in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think there's the Dodgers and I would include the Brewers along with the Dodgers now. This is two straight years now where the Brewers are playing like one of the best teams in baseball. And last year they ran into that Dodgers pitching staff that shut everybody down the entire way until the World Series. I think the Brewers, nobody talks about Milwaukee, and it's because they've never really done it in the playoffs. So they feel like a really great regular season team and a team that doesn't have quite enough in the postseason in order to move through. But I think right now the Brewers have more going for them than the Phillies do. And I think the teams like we saw this against the Dodgers, we saw it against the Yankees. Teams that are good don't beat themselves. And the problem with the Phillies is they beat themselves a lot. And that's just in their DNA, I think. And we saw it in the playoffs last year against the Dodgers. We've seen it in numerous different ways going back to the 2023 NLCS. How the Phillies can beat themselves, and the Dodgers don't generally do that. The Brewers generally don't do that. But you're right. Most of the rest of the teams in the National League have similar issues to the Phillies. The Cardinals are not a better team than the Phillies, I don't think. I don't even think I would say that the Braves are a whole lot better than the Phillies right now. I mean, they're still missing Ronald Acuña Jr. We don't know exactly when he is going to get back. I'd say right now, based on the standings, the Braves are better. We haven't seen the Braves in forever. But I think they're a more consistent team. But they had a really awful month of June, like the Phillies had in April. So they're not immune to it either. So it's a good question. We are so used to seeing this Phillies team fail in the same ways every year that I think we just automatically factor it in as part of their DNA. And that's why so many people want changes. It's like, something's got to change. It's like if it's the same players who are going to try this again, the same thing is going to happen. And that's why the trade deadline feels maybe like it's more important than it actually is.
The thing with the Brewers is that you hear, and then when you watch them, you see, you know, the whole reputation of they do the little things right. And part of you rolls your eyes at that statement every time. But then when you see what people are talking about, even like the first thing people will mention on that list is like, well, you hit the cutoff man. And you're like, yeah, no kidding. Do you watch the last 9 games with the Phillies? Think they have a bullseye on that cutoff man? Because I think we know that they don't. And that's one of just many sloppy defensive things you can see out there. I'll circle back to something I said earlier this week on another show, but that it was Real Muto who committed that brain fart really ticked me off. That it was him more so than other people. And that all you got was like, oh, yeah, it was just a bad base running call. Man, it was an inexplicably bad base running call. It doesn't make sense that you did that at 30-whatever years old and the position you have and the leadership you're supposed to have and the smarts you're supposed to have and the experience you're supposed to have. Why are you doing that? I don't care if it's the only time you did it in your career. That is the type of thing that this team has to forgive itself for night after night. And it's the difference between a win and a loss. And we're entering the part of the season where it's going to mean a lot more than that.
Yeah. Doing the little things right means you don't beat yourself every night. You don't get in your own way. You hit the cutoff man. You know where you're supposed to be base running. Those are the little things that Milwaukee cares about deeply. And those are the things that help them make it through the regular season without a superstar. Now, when they get to the playoffs, I think that's if they got like a big name star somewhere, anywhere, I think it would help boost them over the hump. But at the very least, it makes them a really good regular season team. And that's, you know, that's one of the big goals. It's the only way you make it to the playoffs. So it would be great if the Phillies cared a little bit more about that. And I don't think it would be hard to.
Well, as long as Trey Turner remains at shortstop, it's going to be really hard for this team's defense to get any better. It just is. Like, they're every night. Every night there's going to be a ball hit to shortstop. He's going to misplay. He's either not going to turn the double play, or he's going to allow an infield hit, or it's going to be a straight up error. And maybe it allows a run to score or something. Like, it's just going to be something with Trey Turner. And Trey Turner has been the best hitter on the Phillies in the month of July. And so again, I think,
of course,
generally speaking, we would make the trade of great offensive Trey Turner, even if it means bad defense Trey Turner. But I don't know. Even that has its limits. I think we're seeing if you're committing an error every night, it's a real problem, especially in a short series. And that's really what we're thinking about October. We're just thinking about October here. That's really what we're coming down to.
I mean, think of really... Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. I would really love to know what he truly thinks about all this, because he gets asked every time, like, you know, I know I shouldn't have done that, you know, it'll never happen again, blah, blah, blah. What is he actually doing? And does he think he needs to do something? Because people are like, with these big name players, yeah, they're not going to actually, you know, practice grounders. They're this old. They've been in the league this long. I'm like, maybe he needs to. Maybe he needs to actually do that and take time and do the basics. Like, it's not going to hurt you. It's really frustrating to see all this stuff and sort of feel like Turner's not doing anything about it. You know, just continuing to play when you've continually made these mistakes is not... No, I don't like it.
Turner makes an error at short with 2 outs. This is a man on base. Pitcher's got to throw more pitches to get out of that. And if it's a bullpen arm, he's given up, you know, another base hit or something. He's walking a guy. If it's a starter who thought they were going to be coming out, it's the difference between five and two-thirds innings with more men on base that he's got to worry about when he comes out of the game versus like 6 innings of sharper pitched ball. The impact of this is what I'm saying is it's more than just on Trey Turner. It's going to, like, all of these issues bleed into each other. And I, you know, you spend the last couple of weeks trying to pick one to solve and hope that it kind of like has a positive effect on more than one area. But you can just see every night. And like, you know, like we're saying, it just gets old hearing like, yeah, you know, I just got to get better. I don't need to hear what he's doing to get better. I'm certainly not going to tell him how to get better. All you do is turn that game on every night and you see it happen over and over again. You see pitchers get into more trouble and have to throw more pitches and the physical toll that takes on them because he goofed it. He goofed it again. And some nights it's more than one error, but they don't call it an error. And it's clearly an issue. It's great to see them come out and be like, well, Trey Turner's our shortstop. But there's also this comical aspect to that when then he comes out the next night and oopsie daisies your way into another couple runs for the other team. Like, that's the problem that it's rapidly approaching the point where it's really got to be addressed. But how can you? It's the kind of issue that's perfectly set to be complicated at this point in the season, at this point in his career, at this point with this roster. There's not like there's an automatic solution here. There's just a lot of automatic problems.
Yeah. Well, and I think go ahead, Liz. Yeah.
I'm going to say what's even more frustrating is that the number of errors that he commits that are called base hits, he's having a bigger impact than we even know because half, you know, I would say probably at least a quarter of the time, some of his errors are called as base hits. And that's not entirely true. If he had not screwed up, it would definitely have not been a base hit. The scorers could do whatever they want. But I mean, that's like a whole other aspect. Like there are a bunch of errors he's committed that are not marked as errors. And that's also impacting the Phillies. Like I was thinking, I wonder if I went through and like calculated how many runs he allowed from each of his errors. And I'm like, but there are so many errors that aren't even counted that I'll look at and be like, that's an error that definitely cost a run, but it's a base hit. Like this is a huge problem. The more I think about it, it's like massive. And it is frustrating that no one is talking about what they're doing about it.
Well, it's interesting you say that because there was a play against the Dodgers. Andy Páez hit a ball to shortstop that was ruled an infield hit at the time. And just over the weekend was changed into an error on Trey Turner. So they took a little batting average away from Páez. They took a little ERA away from Christopher Sanchez. So Christopher Sanchez got his ERA lowered a little bit thanks to that scoring decision. So that's a positive. But Trey Turner now on pace for 28 errors this season, which would obviously be the most in Major League Baseball. And a couple other things just from the weekend. It appears now that Brandon Marsh is officially back to being a platoon outfielder. Don Mattingly has been looking at Marsh's plate appearances against lefties and deciding that it now looks as though all three outfield positions on this $300 million roster are going to be platoons. So that's fun. That's what you wanted at the start of the season for sure.
Oh God!
And in July, Bryce Harper is hitting 153. With a 279 on-base percentage and a 278 slugging percentage. He has one home run, six doubles, and a 557 OPS here in the month of July. Schwarber's power numbers way down in July. Do we believe in all-star fatigue for Marsh,
no.
Harper, Schwarber? Is that a real thing?
No, I mean, maybe it's a real thing, but I think you can also just point to the general swoopiness of all three of those players' offensive outputs. The miracle of Brandon Marsh was that he was able to consistently play at the level he'd been playing at for a couple of months, long enough to get into the All-Star game. This is not entirely unexpected. You know, that's just the reason he was being played up so much is because, oh, he's finally shaken free of this curse. And, well, curses like that don't leave that easily. So, and hitting is fluid. You got to be making adjustments as they're adjusting to you. So, That is an issue that is disappointing but not surprising. And then, you know, Schwarber, Harper, they're a part of the same offense that comes and goes as it pleases. And we did talk about on Friday that, like, yeah, the big three from the first half of this season is very different from the big three of the offense now, where you guys got guys like Bohm is hitting, you know, statistically hitting better. Real Muto is statistically hitting better. You're getting when you get contributions, you're getting them from a different set of guys at this point, which is, again, how this offense works. You can never get all of them hot at the same time, which is part of why it doesn't work. I think ultimately you expect and you'll want to see more, especially from Schwarber and especially from Harper. I don't think it's fair to say that, like, yeah, to just lump it all into, well, they're inconsistent and they always have been. Do you guys want to win or not? Like it does come down to sometimes a superstar has just got to keep playing like a superstar. So we said you were playing like an elite guy earlier in the season, Bryce, when you were. those aren't elite numbers that John just read out loud. So maybe get those back up again, because you do need Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber hitting for this team to function.
Yeah.
Ooh. By the way, and this is an on-base, again, it's an on-base percentage problem. Schwarber and Harper are going to go into homer droughts. Like, they just, mm-hmm. they are. The way you get around that is by having a bunch of guys in your lineup who can get on base. And just, you have constant traffic, so that if you get the single from Bryce Harper, you score a couple runs. If you get a contribution from Trey Turner or whoever, you're still able to score runs. On base percentages on this team, Schwarber leads at 365, Harper's at 357, Marsh is at 328, which is okay, but that's not a great number. It's okay. JT Realmuto's on base percentage is 302. You've got Trey Turner at 295, Edmundo Sosa is 249, Justin Crawford 304, Alec Bohm 282. Like, these are the on base percentages littered throughout this lineup. It's just, it's not good enough, and they're not going to have a consistent offense this way. By the way, just as we're wrapping up here, I want to ask you guys a little trivia question without looking at the numbers. On Baseball Reference, there are four Phillies players who are currently worth more than one win above replacement. Just four of them. Can you name the four players who are above one win replacement in terms of position players?
Oh, so that not pitchers. Include, okay.
Not pitchers.
So Schwarber's one of them. Here. Schwarber's one of them, yes.
Yeah, he's got to be.
Yep. He leads with 2.5.
Oh my God.
I mean, I feel like the question is being asked because the obvious answers aren't part of it, but I feel like, well, I got to say Harper.
Harper's one of them.
Yeah.
Yep. 1.8 wins above replacement for Harper, by the way. Again, not phenomenal, but 1.8 for Harper.
Mm. I feel like Marsh's defense is stuck.
Marsh is the next
getting...
one. Oh, no, okay. Marsh is one of them. 1.6. So who's number four? Who's number
Alec
four?
Bohm.
Nope.
Mm. Hang on.
Is it Rincones? Is it?
Nope.
Nope. Okay.
But you're on the right track, Liz.
I thought I might be. Yeah.
Liz, it's your favorite player.
Oh my God! Still, is it Adolis Garcia?
No, it's not Adolis Garcia. He's your favorite,
No. From this year, yeah, thus far.
Wow. Okay. No, we joked about it on the last round table how this was your guy.
As a human, I like Adolis Garcia. Now I don't remember who it is. I turned 43 over the weekend, so.
He's been making diving catches in center field all season long. Big home runs against the Nationals.
Derek Hill
with a 1.5 wins above replacement, the fourth highest WAR on the Phillies so far this year. Derek Hill has played in 29 games, folks, and he
what
has
a
1.5. What an amazing
pickup. Look
pick
at this
up.
Positively. What a pickup. Yeah. Exactly the pickup this team needs. Let's do more of that.
Yep. Totally. That's a great way of looking at it. I like the glasses half full, the rosy look on things, Justin. That's your nature. You're just a glasses half full guy. Just generally speaking, I think. That's right.
Check the comments of anything. That's all they're saying about me.
When will Justin
too
stop
tall,
being so
too
positive? That's right.
Too charming.
I know. Enough already. All right. Well, we got a week until the trade deadline. So we're going to be busy here on the podcast, and Justin on Baseball Prospectus, me on The Good Fight, Liz as she's online. We'll be responding to all the different things that are going down here. But let's wrap up this episode with some final thoughts. Justin, final thoughts.
First, she just referred to it, but happy birthday to Elizabeth over the weekend.
Thank you.
Celebrated her birthday.
That's
secondly,
right. Happy birthday, Liz.
I was starting to suspect something like this was happening, and then Phillies Nation published the blog that confirmed it. Every time you look up and the Phillies are getting hit by a pitch with the bases loaded, it's always one guy. I know it's not literally, it can't have always been that over the past, let's just say, 5 years. Or since Alec Bohm has been here. But boy, it sure does feel like it's him every time. And now statistics prove basically it is, in that Alec Bohm surpassed, guess who, Chase Utley, as the most hit by a pitch with the bases loaded player in Philadelphia Phillies franchise history with 6. Six. Wow. He doesn't get an RBI for that. I can never remember.
He does. He gets an RBI.
Does
that count the playoffs against the Cardinals with Ryan Helsley when he got hit? I don't know that it counts the playoffs.
Great question.
All regular season stats exclude playoff stats, which always mm-hmm. bothers me.
Yeah. So I think that's seven total.
There you go. Yeah, and that's quite a – they talk about a season of milestones. You know, here's another one for this team. We're coming.
You can't trade Bohm now. You can't trade Bohm. Yeah. I mean
you got to retire his number, I'm pretty sure.
Just at least.
Little, like, marks on it everywhere he got hit by a pitch.
That's right.
With the bases loaded. But, yeah, that's fun statistic during a very not fun stretch of Phillies baseball.
Liz, final thoughts?
I don't really have anything this week other than planning my Phillies games for the second half of the season since I didn't go any in the first. And it looks like my husband and I will make it to a grand total of one Phillies game this year because it is unbelievably expensive to go.
Yes, it is.
It's
no
very
doubt
expensive
about it.
To go. So just one game this year, but hopefully it'll be a good one.
Well, if you're planning on home games coming up, the Phillies are going to be on the road for a little while. They actually start a series against the Marlins here. The Marlins had been playing fantastic baseball. They are, however, losers of 12 in a row as
thank
they
goodness.
Come into this series against the Philadelphia Phillies. Just falling down the standings here in the National League East and have turned into clear sellers this week at the trade deadline. Sandy Alcantara will not be on this team by the end of the week. That much we can all assure you. Yeah. Whoever else is going to go, we don't know just yet. But interesting matchup on Monday night. Zach Wheeler against former Philly Tyler Phillips, who was a starter with the Phillies, went to the Marlins, was their closer. He was the guy who would smack himself in the face as he would run in from the bullpen. I don't think he's doing that prior to every inning that he comes out to pitch as a starter now. I'm guessing that they cautioned him against that. But we'll see on Monday night. He's got a 3.52 ERA on the season, does Tyler Phillips. Now, I wonder if he's just a bulk starter here. No, he's got 79 innings under his belt this year as a starter. So, all right, Tyler Phillips, having a little bit of a season there with Miami. Sandy Alcantara will get the mound for the Philly against the Phillies on Tuesday night against Aaron Nola. So we'll see whether or not he's still a Marlin. Might be his last game in a Marlins uniform. And then they got a game on Wednesday, Jesus Luzardo against TBD. And that will wrap up the three-game series before the Phillies head to Baltimore for a weekend series against the A's. In Maryland. So that's what the calendar is looking like for the Phillies here on trade deadline week as we are getting down to it. August 3rd, remember everybody, is a week from today. That is the trade deadline for Major League Baseball. So things are going to start getting hot here over the next week and we'll see what the Phillies do. Lots of rumors going to be coming telling you Dave Dombrowski is going to do something huge. He's going to do something big. He's aggressive at the trade deadline. We'll see.
Ooh.
We'll see. That's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Again, you can watch this roundtable edition of the podcast over at the WHYY YouTube channel. If you subscribe to the WHYY YouTube channel, you can see every roundtable episode as well as WHYY's terrific online content. They got lots of stuff there that you're going to want to check out. If you are an audio podcast listener only, we are on Apple Podcasts. We are on Spotify. Everywhere you can get your podcasts, that's where we are. Please tell your friends and your family members about the show. We will hold you by the hand during this very exciting week of Phillies baseball trade deadline stuff. This is always one of the most fun times of the year. No matter what you're doing, whether you're a buyer or a seller, a lot of fun this time of year to kind of parse through the noise and then see what the Phillies actually do to try and improve a team that will go to the playoffs and needs a lot of help in order to do well once they're there. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.